Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, my man? How you doing tonight?
I am good. We cut it close tonight, man. We're trying to get on the air. For those who are listening, we were rushing and trying to break our necks to get here. I'm coming from West Virginia from my daughter Brittany Williams' graduation. Congratulations to my daughter Brittany.
Congrats.
She graduated high school, man. So
okay.
I was very proud. So I don't blame her.
What's her plans before we go any further?
Her plan is she's going to a school called Fairmont College in West Virginia, and
okay.
She's already signed or even already got her schedule. So I kudos to her to getting it all done and not running around like a chicken with her head cut off. So she's going to take psych and major, and she's going to minor in social work. So
okay,
she likes
okay.
kids.
She's going
to... Yeah.
Okay, so she's going to basically give back. That's basically what she's doing.
Yeah. She wanted to be a pediatrician, but she
mm-hmm.
I don't think she liked that time frame she had to put in, so she decided to go this route. So I say, hey,
right.
either way you're giving back, you give back. It doesn't matter. So
right.
she's following
right.
her passion, and that's the most important thing, not something just for the money. And I think
exactly.
that'll be great. So
exactly.
I want to give a shout-out to my man, to two of my friends that I saw while I was gone. One is my cousin, Eric Colehouse-Turner. That's my man. That's my cuzzo. I love him. I had dinner with him last night and my man, Malcolm Treadway, that came through, and we broke bread last night and had a lot of fun, had a lot of laughs. And I just want to give a shout-out to them because they support me a lot down in what we call the Ville in Steubenville, Ohio. So I want to
mm-hmm.
give a shout-out to Steubenville, Ohio, and to Big Red, and to Weir High, and to all those people down there, because I got a lot of family down there. So just wanted to give a shout-out to them also. So,
okay. For those who don't know, the program is called No Chaser. We give it to you straight. We walk up to the bar, ask the bartender for whatever our choice of drink is, quite naturally. I drink a mixed drink, but Mac, he wants something straight. We regardless of what it is, vodka, whatever, he wants it straight with no chaser.
Absolutely.
And that's the name of the program. He's Mac. I'm JT. I'll run the number 347-637-3220. We also have a chat room if you'd like to relay whatever you have to say. In the chat room, it's there. Mac's the host. I'm the co-host. You're on, my man.
Well, first, I want to start off giving credit to our sponsor, which is Trinity Web Solutions, which gives you domains, web hosting, whatever. If you want to check them out, you can get over to trinitywebsolutions.org. So get on over there to them and check them out if you need any web services or anything for your business or for whatever your needs are. It's pretty much do-it-yourself. So with that being said, first topic tonight. I wanted to talk about is Kobe versus LeBron. I bring this up because earlier this week, you know, Lakers were eliminated, and you know, LeBron and them won, of course. But I want to go back to, and I want to, you know, hear the listeners or other listeners' opinions of this. And you know, all you have to do is to hit that number one if you're listening to the show, and you can come into the queue. And here's my question: what is the difference between Kobe's 42? And LeBron's 40, and I'll give you my opinion, and then I'll hear what Jerry has to say, and then I'll take calls from anybody else who wants to sound off about that or anything else you want to sound off about the NBA playoffs right now. I think that Kobe's was more, showed more clutch, more who he was, Black Mamba-ish. Somebody, some people say he was selfish, you know, but I wonder if people would say he was selfish if they had won. So I think his meant a lot more than the 40 and 18 that he did. Only difference is, I will give LeBron his credit, is that, you know, those are Oscar Robertson type numbers have been done since Oscar Robertson, which is great in the playoffs, and I give him all kudos for that. But I don't call it a big moment because I think if he had put up the same numbers without D-Wade, he would have lost. And I also think that it wasn't a win or go home. With Kobe's, it was a win or go home, which I give more credit to a guy being a superstar, put him on his back, as opposed to a guy who, if he lost that game, would have had another game to come back and play and make up for it, if it was even 3-1. So, with that being said, that's my take on it. Jerry, what's your take on it?
Well, I have to beg to differ with you slightly, just for the simple fact is, Kobe scored that 40-something points, and it was his 47-something points with no assist, if I'm not mistaken in that. I think he didn't have one assist in that game, which was amazing to me compared to LeBron, including other people into the game. I'm not a big LeBron supporter, but besides scoring that 40, Dwayne Wade had a good game, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And he included others into the game also, but
right.
Those two basically got, I think, like 70-something points of the 100-something points they scored.
Right.
So
right.
I have to give kudos to LeBron because he had to come through on that particular night because the game before, they were absolutely horrible, and it was up to him. And Dwayne Wade to put the team on their back and to at least win a game so they would have another game to play. So I'm not saying that neither one was more clutch, but I think LeBron was more impressive because besides himself scoring those points, he included the rest of the team, but primarily his cohort, which is Dwayne Wade. But he did distribute the ball, got us some assists versus Kobe. He was the team. 40-something points with
right.
no assists. I don't know how often that happens. That was the first time I've seen that happen, 40-something points with no assists. So.
But my only thing the only point I will bring up is this. But you also, I can't punish a guy. Not that I'm trying to promote, you know, Kobe, because it's strictly opinion. But I also can't promote a guy who shoots 40 points, no assists, but yet the main two cogs on his team, except for probably one, was really trying out there. And I mean, I can't pass the ball off. I played point guard, and I can pass the ball all I want. I mean, he did his 40 points, but at this point, we're talking about a veteran team that should have known. Everybody knows their role. You know what you need to do. And you need to step up. And we know that the game before that, they didn't step up, especially Pau Gasol. So for me, a guy who goes out there and shoots 40 with no assists, do I give him a pass? No, I don't give him a pass. But I also say this: it wasn't as if all those guys were out there rotating and moving around and playing hard, except one person. And here's the last point I'll make: how many times has Kobe hit numbers like that before? When they won, everybody goes, "It's the Black Mamba." Everybody goes, man, that was Kobe. He was clutch, man. He hit these shots. And we still celebrate. They still celebrate the 81 points against the Raptors as if that was something. And I'm going like, really? You know. So, I understand your point. The only point, and I agree with you, you know, there is no excuse for you to be a two guard and to score that many points and not have any assists. But I'll give him the same token that it wasn't exactly a stellar cast standing around there watching him play, watching him do it, and nobody was really moving with the exception of Pau Gasol and Bynum. So,
now, this is the deal here. At least four of those guys on the floor, if I'm not mistaken, have won a championship before. So
right.
It's not like those guys were inexperienced and haven't been able to perform when passed the ball, but it seemed like and I understand what you're saying, that Kobe
right.
tried to put it all on his back, but you also have to include somewhat your teammates. And if you score 40-something points and have no assists, what does that say about you?
Right.
I mean, I understand Kobe is the Black Mamba. I understand he's one of the best clutch players that ever played the game. He's got a handful and then some championships. Mm-hmm. But
what I think it says about him, if you're asking that question, is I'll mm-hmm. say this real quick, is that what it says about him is that he didn't, to me, with no assist, he didn't trust his team.
Well, I totally agree with that, I can't believe he wouldn't trust his team. A lot of his teammates that were on the floor with him have won a championship with him. So how can you not trust your those teammates to perform when the pressure's on? Sometimes players get in the mode of, I have to do this all myself and exclude the other players, and that's mm-hmm. at the detriment of the team. Now, he kept the team in there to a certain point, but quite naturally, we all knew, we could all see it, that the Oklahoma City Thunder were definitely the better team mm-hmm. and had more weapons.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, what I will say, though, too, is that remember the comments from the day before. What were the comments the day before? Powell got us to play harder. And
yes.
he was kind of disgusted with his team. So
right.
so which what I'm saying is, you're saying, how can he not trust him? I don't know, but he didn't. And he had said that the day before because they had played awful. So I think what happened is he figured, you know what, I'm going to put him on my back and I'm going to do it. And that was probably a mistake. But at the same time, you know, for me, from what I saw, you know, I think he should have gave some assists, but I think it was the right call. Kind of, it was kind of the right call with it. But I agree with you. It shouldn't have been no assist. So, you know, do we have anybody calling in or anybody in the queue?
No, we don't have anybody
okay.
In the chat room and nobody on the queue.
Good.
No.
All right. Let's go to the next topic, which I want to ask is, you know, who's to blame for the LeBron loss? For the Lakers loss, I don't know why I said LeBron, but for the Lakers loss, who do you blame, Jerry?
Ooh, who do I blame in that? You know, I think that the team, because of the transition from the offense and the whole coaching organization that they had last year to this year,
mm-hmm.
And basically what I saw was like a dysfunctional team.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the change and probably the resistance of change,
right?
I would have to blame the front office of the Los Angeles Lakers. I can't put the onus on the players because the simple fact is they're just playing under a new system for the whole year and a shortened year at that. And their roster was changed in between in the year, losing Derek Fisher and other players. I can't think of who else they lost.
Right.
And Fisher was a mm-hmm. cog in won several championships with the Lakers.
Right. Right.
And it take something out of it. I would have to say I can't go with the coaching staff. I would have to go with the front office, Mitch Kupchak. And the ownership.
Let me say this. I acknowledge what you're saying, but I disagree, and I tell you why. You lose Lamar Odom, and you lose Derek Fisher. I understand mm-hmm. that those are two big cogs you lose. But when you're going through a 60-game, not an 82-game, or a 60-game schedule, that's enough time for you to at some point get it. That, you know, and I don't think Mike Brown's offense or his offense or his game plan is any different because you have guys who play defense and they play offense. Yeah, I know the system change, I'll give you a little bit on that. But I have to say, to me, I think it's the team as a whole. I think some of it falls on Bynum, and I think some of it falls on Gasol at the end of the day because they were doing great during the regular season. It wasn't like you saw this, But as happened now for the second year in a row, they have lost their they've lost in this what, second round or what have you. And to me, it's the same thing. Bynum not giving effort. Gasol this time not giving effort in a key game. You know, turn around a little bit at the end. But to me, I blame the players more than Kupchak, because I can't blame Kupchak, because if he gave away, he traded Derek Fisher,
right.
And I think he also traded
Lamar Odom,
right.
Right,
he traded both of them, but I can't square it on him, because now if this were something where it was, you know, if it wasn't 60 games, if it was like 40 games, 30 games, if it was something crazy like that, I probably would have said, you know what, I give it. I probably wouldn't have blamed anybody, because
mm-hmm.
it's hard to get chemistry and comfort. But you're talking about guys who have played together for the last 2 or 3 years. You add Ramon Sessions, who really only got them better, who really was better, and then you had the emergence of, I can't remember the young guy with the dreads, but he came in. And he played well. And they did play well during the season. But it's unexplainable to me why in the most clutch moments, or the time when it's most important, which is the playoffs, that the people who we're talking about is the same people we were talking about last year, which was Gasol, Bynum. You know, and, I mean, last year they just went crazy and just knocked everybody over. But, you know, as I said, I don't agree with you on the Kupchak thing. I think it comes down to players, because no matter what you do, unless you're talking about a brand new team where nobody's played together, hadn't had any time, players gonna play. 60-some games is enough time to get some chemistry. And we're not talking about all new guys. We're talking about guys who've been together for, the core group has been together for maybe like three to four years.
In one system.
But that's an offensive system. That's not but to not play defense and not grab rebounds and not do other things. There's no excuse for that. Or not effort plays. That's no excuse.
I understand that. In my opinion, I think they played inconsistent. I mean, they had skilled players. They had a decent team, but
mm-hmm.
they played very inconsistent. And I think it came to light in the playoffs, because now they're playing the better teams versus some not so better teams throughout the season,
right.
And the inconsistent play that they had when they played during the season came to light, because now they're playing better teams. Like I think they played Memphis and then they played Oklahoma. They had a hard time with Memphis because Memphis played tough defense and they're one of the better turnover teams in the league. And then they played OKC, who had a higher skill level at a lot of positions on the court, and I think that, in my opinion, brought the inconsistency out and to light. And I can't, you know, you stuck in one system for a long time. Players are not machines; they're human. And they're resistant to a change, and then you take away one of the glues in the locker room in Derek Fisher, and one of Kobe's closest friends that he's won championships with,
right.
And a point guard, and I saw a lot of dysfunction and a lot of body language with players toward Mike Woodson. And toward
right.
the things that were being taught or shown or told to do on the court, because these guys were used to one system, Phil Jackson, and a triangle offense and whatever defense that they were employing. And now all that's changed, including one of the glues in the locker room. He's gone. Now you got Mike Woodson basically out there hanging out to dry, because now the ownership says we're going to put a stamp on our team by not having Phil Jackson and putting
right.
somebody in here has got something totally different. That's one of the reasons why anyone didn't hire Brian Shaw, because Brian Shaw was going to probably keep the triangle offense in effect. They wanted to go a totally different direction, and the team, in my opinion, was very resistant to that. And even though they played well because of the players they had, but they were inconsistent during the season. Now they have a lot better players, playing better teams in the playoffs, and that,
right.
like I said, that inconsistency came to light, and that's why they got kicked out of the playoffs, and we got two callers on the line.
Okay,
let me
bring
in a caller from the 410. Welcome to the welcome to No Chaser with Mac and Williams. State your name and what do you got to say? Call from the 410. Hello? Hello?
Wow.
Call from the 410. You still there? He hung up. Okay, we got another call here. Call from the 301. Welcome to the Straight No Chaser with Mac and Jerry. What you got to say?
Hello?
Hello? Call from 301. You
Hello?
There?
Wow.
He hung up. What's going on with that? Hello.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I don't know if the system's messed up, but anyway, we'll go through it.
Okay. The caller called back again. Let me see if I can get him here.
All right.
Caller from the 410. Welcome to No Chaser with Mac and Jerry. Oh, he hung up again. What the heck's going on here? Hopefully he'll call back again, Mac. So that was the point I was making about I think because of the turmoil, which was generated basically by the front office. I think Mike Williams was dealt a what the heck is his name? Mike Woodson?
No. You're talking about the new head coach.
The head coach of the Lakers.
Yeah, the head coach of the Lakers.
Head coach of the Lakers was I wouldn't say hung out to dry, but I think he's a sacrificial lamb to take over the team after a head coaching legend.
Yeah, but I think he wasn't hung out to dry. I think he did a good job because obviously if you get to this far in the season, especially without an offensive change in offensive system, then to me, I think he's not out to dry. I mean, he did everything he could. But to me, I just think the whole breakdown was somewhere along the way it was effort. It was just effort. It wasn't, like you said, they were resistant or whatever it was to it. And I don't think that has anything to do with a coach because as me being a coach myself, if you tell people do this, do this, do this, do this, and they don't do it and they're resistant to it, at that point, it's on the players, you know. So go figure. So, but anyway, let me ask this question.
Mm-hmm.
Who I would say right now, you know, tonight's game is going on. There's Boston. And there's also Philly playing right now.
Tonight or tomorrow?
I thought that was tonight. I could be wrong. Or is that tomorrow? Let me see.
Let me do my trusty
research. But I'll look that up. But while we look that up, as I've been watching the game right now, what I want to ask you, Jerry, is, and people can call in on this, is who is, number one, the best point guard in the league right now. What I would say the best point guard in the league right now. And then who's the best left in the playoffs right now? And I'd like to know your take on that.
Oh, wow.
Who's the best in the game and who's the best that's left right now?
Oh, wow. Who's the best in the game? I mean, who's the best in the game right now would be, oh, my God.
That's a hard question.
Who's the best in the game right now? I would have to say, wow.
That's tomorrow, Saturday. That game is tomorrow. My bad. I thought it was tonight.
That's all right.
Game is tomorrow.
How about oh man! Don't tell me! Don't do this to me now.
That's hard, isn't it?
How about Chris? I want to say Chris Paul, but I'm really resistant against that. How about the guy from the Nets, Deron Williams?
That's a popular answer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you say that? And why would? And who would you say is left right now? Who's the best left in the playoffs right now?
Who's the best point guard left right now?
In the
playoffs. In my opinion, right now the best point guard left would be Tony Parker.
You would say Tony Parker. Would you really stick with that?
Hold on, man. I'm thinking here. There's really no point guard in Miami. It's up to Rondo and I don't like the point guard in Philly. And on the other end would be Westbrook and Tony Parker. Oh,
right.
I
knew that would
be
a hard question because I was like, you got to pick between the three of those left. You know, that's to me, in my opinion, just to, while you think about that, my opinion is I think it's Rondo. But I think the thing that everybody ignores with Rondo is that everybody ignores the fact that he doesn't score. The numbers, the eye-popping scores that Deron Williams does, that Westbrook and what Parker do, because they score.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about Rondo, and I think one of the hardest things for a point guard to learn at every level, is the balance between when to score and how to. You have to do a few jobs. You have to run the tempo, control the tempo,
right,
get everybody involved, run the plays, you know, and pass in the right spots, right time in the plays, and at the same time, and if you can, score. And to me, that's a lot on a plate. And I'm not downplaying anybody else in the league right now, but to me, I think Rondo has the best of that. He has a balance. That is just straight, you know, his balance is just, he has it all in a balance. He's not out of whack or out of balance with it. You know, with Westbrook, you know what, you never know what you're going to get. You're going to get a lot of shots, but you never know what else you're going to get with that. With Parker, he does the same thing, but it's not his fault, but he actually has a great team also, but I don't know. I don't look at him in the way I look at Rondo, and I don't know why, because I think I see Rondo do things that are so hard. Because most point guards I see, they do either one thing too much and not enough of the other, or they have a hard time getting the balance of both. And I just think Rondo is if I were starting a point guard with players, it would be Rondo. He just has, I think he has more command of the game. The only downside that everybody tries to play is the fact that he doesn't score. So.
In my opinion, I thought about it, and because he's won championships, I know Rondo has won one championship, but
mm-hmm.
Tony Parker's won more than one championship.
Right.
I would have to say Tony Parker. Right now, I think he has, in my opinion, made the most progress as a point guard since he first came into the league, and you can see the maturity and also the his skill level has increased throughout the years he's been in the league. So I would have to say Tony Parker is probably the best point guard left in the league playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I really would have to say because Mr. Westbrook, and I have to say Mr. Westbrook because I've dogged this guy out for his play last year and doubted that he could up his game because of his mental state in the game. But he's definitely upped his level of play, and I have to call him Mr. Westbrook out of sheer respect because I think this guy still got a lot of upside in him. A very young player with a very young team,
mm-hmm.
and he's one of the main cogs on that team. So I have to say that Tony Parker would be my top, Westbrook would be my 1A, and then Rondo quite naturally. Rondo, I like the way Rondo plays, but sometimes he's a little inconsistent and could be a knucklehead on the court too. So.
Yeah, I give you that too. Let me ask this question. If we don't have any callers, let me ask this question. I just saw on here where Isaiah Thomas is hoping for a return to the NBA or college.
Oh, hell no. Stay in college, for Isaiah. Stay in college, please. Oh my God, Isaiah in the league in the NBA. That's like that's a pariah, man. I don't know how you feel about Isaiah Thomas. I liked him at one point when he was the president or whatever capacity he was in evaluating talent. At one point he was good at evaluating talent. I don't know. He lost that skill and what a lot of other things he lost. Stay in college, in my opinion. He's better off in college. In the pros, he's basically a pariah, in my opinion.
Okay. And you say they're a pariah, wait, because of the way things went down in New York?
Exactly. Yes. Yes. I mean, he's got a reputation now. I mean, and that reputation, in my opinion, says he can't be trusted.
Okay. I think until we know the whole story, which I don't think we ever will, and I don't think we do, I think Isaiah took one for the team. I'm not saying he didn't have anything to do with it, but I think he took one for the team. I do. Because when you think about it, Jerry, how does a guy do convicted of, you know, the court says, you know, they settle and say he did what he did, pay the girl, and yet gets all his money. You don't void it. You don't get out of it. And you keep this guy down out of sight for a while, but you're still paying him. So here's what I say. To me, I think more than Isaiah did something wrong. And I think he took one for the team. That's just me. Because I think if he didn't take one for the team, knowing the NBA culture, why would I pay a guy all that ridiculous amount of money, sit him down in the basement somewhere and hide him for a while and let him make the money, and he's not doing his job after the guy, you know, just cost me X amount of dollars to give to this lady? Now, that's just my – now I might be, you can charge me with conspiracy theory or whatever, but that's what I think. I think he took one for the team.
Well, I mean, he was under contract. Even if you fired him, you're going to have to pay him that rest of that money.
Based on what he did, that could get you out of a contract if you really wanted to. That's a labor issue. This wasn't just a he say she say. This what they did was based on labor law, and they paid her money, and they didn't fight this. They said, okay, cool. We paid her money. Stuck Isaiah. It's like the mafia. You go to jail. You know you ain't gonna say nothing. You take one for the team, and they take care of you, or take care of your family, or whatever, while you out. So what I'm saying is, it just seemed like it was too. Everything was. There was no fight in it. There wasn't the Knicks coming back and trying to do anything. They basically said, okay, cool. It is what it is. All right, we're gonna give you your money. You're gone. Isaiah, we're gonna pay him his money. But you know as well as I do, in professional sports, anytime you owe somebody a ridiculous amount of money like they was paying Isaiah, you're going to get out of it if you can get out of it. I don't care what. I mean, these are the same people who Jeff Green has a problem with his heart, and they basically, you know, take the money from it.
Right, I understand what you're saying, yes.
So I'm kind of saying that these are the NBA and professional sports as a whole are cold-blooded people. If you know if they got a chance to save some money and take it back, you're going to take it. So why would you pay a guy, hide him? He's not doing the job anymore, and you're still paying him, and yet you had an EEOC kind of thing, and you paid the lady gladly and still paying Isaiah. You ain't trying to get your money back or trying to get out of the contract. I think that, for me, that just kind of stinks. That kind of smells like, okay, you took one for the team. Because if you're still cool with the owner, which he is, and you still got a good relationship with him, how could you? If you cost me that kind of money, I couldn't be cool with you. I'd be pretty pissed. Like, dude, you just called this girl names, and you did this, and you did that, and I'm still paying you? And now I got to hire you and pay you? Well, man, it's not like he's still getting paid from the, like I said, like you said, he's still getting paid, but this guy's went and had a job at Florida International and, you know, got fired from that, and, you know, he's still getting paid off that stuff.
Well, what's that telling you then? What's that telling you about his ability? He got fired from Florida International
Let's be honest, Jerry. Mm-hmm. Jerry, if it was a powerhouse team, I would have said to you, I give you that. But when you're going, I've never heard of Florida International until Isaiah went there. Obviously, there ain't no blue chippers and ain't no studs coming in, okay? And I don't care. I've been a coach, and I still am a coach. You give me a team with no talent or marginal talent against other teams that have better talent, I don't care how good I coach. You can't train height. You can't train athleticism. You can't. Now, I don't know who he had or what he had, but I know he ain't have blue chippers. So
but he took the job.
Me,
huh? But he took the job.
No. I don't begrudge a guy taking a job. I would take a job mm-hmm. if it was a challenge and I felt like it was mm-hmm. a good challenge, even if I thought it was mm-hmm. a losing proposition. I'm going to take it for the love of the fact that I want to try to see. It's like anything else. Like I've been a restaurant manager,
mm-hmm.
and I took a store that was terrible. I had to
right.
fire all the people, basically blur them out, put in my own people, train them. I went through hell doing that. But it was
right.
because I saw a vision. So I said, you know what, let me take this vision and see if I can make this happen. So that's what I did. So
right.
what I'm saying is, as a coach, you do that all the time. I take a marginal player and say, okay, he's not good on his own, but if you know what, but if the guy can give me, but I can see he can jump. He can't shoot a lick, but if he can give me, but if he can jump and give me, you know, 5 to 10 rebounds a game, and I put him with the guys I have, I can get that done. Maybe I can get him to a better player, what have you. So I don't blame him for taking it. Isaiah just hasn't had. Now, if Isaiah was in a top job, like a Kentucky, like a, you know, Indiana, or somewhere where you could get the best players or some of the best players, a best player, two best players, three best players, then I would say to you, in 3 years, if he had that a 26 and 65 record, I would sit and tell you, you're right. He don't have it. He don't got it. I tell you that. But
mm-hmm.
the fact that he loses at a small school called Florida International that we've never heard of, we don't know not one player that's come from there has gone to the NBA, that tells you. Obviously, the talent, you weren't getting that kind of talent, and that's why they hired Isaiah. If I remember, they hired him because they wanted the name to try to pull players to the school.
Well, I mean, like I said, he took the money, he took the opportunity.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what
right.
other opportunities he had out there, if,
right.
unless he needed a job and needed to take this coaching job.
Right.
You've been at the highest level in the game, and you take a lack of a better word, a nondescript job, head coaching a team. I've heard of Florida International. It's not a big school, but I've heard
right.
of it.
Right.
You take a job like
I'm
Florida
saying,
International
I'm just saying
University.
We're not seeing them in March. That's what I'm saying. They're not on TV. We don't see them. Like, this is not a school that you go, oh yeah, that's, you know, you don't see that. But let me say this, Jerry. I think that part of it is this. I'm gonna tell you, for just be real about it. I tell you this. Whatever happened with Isaiah, when he took one for the team for New York, his reputation got bad. Nobody wanted to touch him. Nobody wants him in their locker room. Nobody wanted to do
right.
that. So that was the
right.
job that was offered to him. That's the job he took. Because
right.
that's what he wants to do, is he wants to coach. So what I'm saying is, so will he ever get another chance again? I don't know. But I think that because of what happened in New York, it'll stop him from getting top jobs or other jobs like that, because we all know it's a reputation business. Your rep is what it is. Now, do I think that he'll ever get a top job at a great college or what have you? I think he can, because the name still carries in basketball circles. It's not like it's that bad, not like he killed somebody or something, but at the same time, I understand your point. But for me, you know, like I said, I don't think a 26-65 record is bad. I agree with that, no doubt. But, you know, he should have been fired. I'm not saying he shouldn't have been, but I guess what I'm saying is the jury's still out on him as far as a coach. As a GM, I think the jury is in, is that he's not very good at GM. I agree with that, because he got a whole bunch of players that he got from New York and paid all these high exorbitant salaries, and they didn't work out.
Right.
You know, and for that, I give you that. GM, yes. Coach, it's still, the jury's still out, even though he's had a rough time. But, you know, my thing is to prove, a coach, you have to have some talent. And at a coach like Florida International, it's not exactly like everybody was running banging down the door. You know, now you give him Calipari's job with the class he just had or class he's getting this year, and now you come back and you tell me, now he goes to 26-65 record in 3 or 4 years, you know, whatever, then, okay, holler, you know, all right, that's cool. You know, 3 seasons, I'd be the first one to say, okay, the jury's in. He's not very good because he had talent, you know. I just don't think it's – I think it's funny. I think it's fair in college circles. You know, a coach almost can't win. If he has talent, well, he won because he had talent. If he has marginal talent, well, you know, he's great. But, you know, I just think they get both ends of the spectrum. But I would like to see Isaiah get another shot at coaching in college. I don't know about pros, but I know definitely in college I'd like to see him get another shot. But, you know, be that as it may.
My question is this: and do you think he's a viable coach? You think he's a good enough coach to even coach at the college level? I mean, he tried this the first time he coached at the college level, if I'm not mistaken, was at this Florida International University.
Right.
And now he got fired from that, and now you think he's got a reputation that he had trouble at the professional level, and now he went to a relatively nondescript school, not a high-profile school, mm-hmm. and got fired from that.
Mm-hmm.
You think somebody's going to take a chance and hire him with that type of resume?
I think I think somebody will hire him with some talent and to be a draw to a school to get better players. You can still have. There's still Division I schools that get a couple players that some players might come because of Isaiah Thomas. Because what I'm saying is, as far as put it like this, as far as people who hire, people who are in charge, chancellors, all that kind of stuff, they might be a little worried. But to a player coming up who's watched him play, who see the old films, who know he's one of the 50 greatest, who's seen him play, a kid like that is going to say, I might come to that school because now I'm a point guard and now I'm going to be taught by the best, one of the best point guards in NBA history.
Right.
And I'm going to come there. And that might be enough to draw you guys. But I think if you put him in a situation where he's in a Division I, that's a good school, is a basketball school, has talent, I think you can draw more talent and then let him, and then we'll see what happens. But to me, I can't count Florida International against him because I'm sitting here saying we don't know who comes from that school. And it would be, you know, that would be like giving me five guys on the side of a road, some five Spanish guys or whoever on the side of a road and saying they don't play no basketball, go coach them for 3 years and we have this horrible record. And then you come back to me and say, well, damn, you know, we're going to fire you, not winning. I'm like, well, give me some talent. And I'm just saying, I don't know if he had what kind of talent he had. And I'm just saying, Florida International doesn't jump off the pages of Florida. But if you put it like this, I'd like to see him with the kind of talent that a Kentucky gets, or Baylor, or you know, all these other schools that have talent. Let me see what he does with talent. Then I can tell you, yeah, he can do it, or no, he can't do it, because you know, that's why I try to tell people all the time: just because you have talent doesn't mean you're always going to win.
Well, that's true. You're right about that.
I can coach talent all day long, and if they don't adapt to me or hear me or don't like me, I can do all the talking I want. I ain't going to win. And that's why people always say, well, you know, he won because he got all this talent. I'm like, look, talent is – to me, I'm going to tell you, from a coach standpoint, not coaching in the Goodman League and in the semi-pro, you're dealing with dudes with egos, attitudes sometimes. And they ain't the easiest guys to coach. It's not easy telling the guy who's 27, 28 years old, you know, you got to slide your feet. Simple stuff. And they looking at you like, dude, really? Like, you know, I just, you know, it's like when you tell a guy he's fading on a shot. Really? Like, why would I'm not fading on my shot. I had 40 points, you know, against this team last year. Okay, but that's why you had only 15 this time, because you was clanking it off the rim. And it's hard to tell them that. And the only way I've seen that you can do it is when you show them back film of themselves. That doesn't lie. But to most guys, we don't get to show that film to them, like NBA guys. See, NBA guys can't. They see the film, you know. So all I'm saying to you, basically I'm just saying all this, I'm rambling, but what I'm trying to say is Isaiah, give me Isaiah with some talent at the college level, and then come back to me, and then I'll tell you what I think. But
well,
I think without talent, that's it.
Let me see if I can bring this caller. I got all internet right. issues, so hopefully I went to another my laptop and see if I can bring this caller in. Looks like
no
black.
Problem.
Caller
okay.
from the caller from the 202. Welcome to the Straight No Chaser with Mac and Jerry. State your name and tell me what you got to say.
What's going on, fellas? This is Black, man.
What's up, Black?
Oh, yeah.
What's up?
What's going on, man?
What's good?
Sorry for the delay, Black. My PC, for some reason, I lost my internet connection. Mac and I were just talking, so I flipped to my laptop to see if I can get in, and I saw you sitting there for about 7 minutes, so I'm sorry about that. What you got to say to the conversation we've been talking about?
Oh, no problem, man. Yeah, I heard y'all was talking about Isaiah Thomas and the Florida International job.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just became a Division One probably about 6 or 7 years ago, so that was going to be a tough job for any coach going
exactly.
to try to get talent in here.
Right.
Okay.
They just became Division One in football too, so that was a real tough job that they put Zeke in. But Zeke was a big name, so hopefully they were thinking they were going to bring some talent there. But that's a tough job.
Right. And that's what I was trying to tell Jerry. I was like, I can't judge him like that because I was like, he didn't have no talent. I mean, when you do a 26-65 record, and I don't know who's on your roster, and I don't hear about you the whole year. I mean, the only time I heard about Florida International was when Isaiah got hired and when Isaiah got fired. I heard nothing in between. If they wrote a little article blurb about this or this or that. But for me, you know, that's why I was saying that's a tough job. And I knew he had to take that job because that's the only job he probably had to him, though. And that's what I was trying to tell Jerry. You know, after you come out of a scandal like you did in New York Knicks, you know, you're going to take what you're going to take because if you're a coach, you got to itch. You want to coach. You want to get an opportunity. And sometimes, you know, somebody says, look, you know, you can get a bad coaching job and be like, all right, I'll take it because you always see a vision or you want to try to always make it yours. So, you know, like I told him, Black, I give me Isaiah with some talent and his name and draw players. Because I told him, I said, see, players don't care about what the New York Knicks would do. All they feel like is, I saw this guy do it. And if he can do it and he knows it and did it for all these years, I want to learn from him because I want to be good like that. So that's why I said he's got a hope. Somebody will pick. I believe somebody will pick him up, but I don't. I think it'll be like a Kentucky or like top. No, but I think if he goes somewhere where he can get some blue chip, a couple blue chippers, one or two, and maybe get more because of his name, I think it'd be great. I challenge anybody to say that.
Well, my question is this then: why even stop at the college level? Quite naturally, you know that there's some pro jobs that are open right now and some that are going to be open later on after the finals is open. You think one of these teams like Orlando or Charlotte are going to be looking Isaiah way or should they look Isaiah's way?
I think that scandal is still too fresh in those GM's mind to give Isaiah a shot. And you got guys like Jerry Sloan still available.
Yeah,
it's going to be tough if he can get a shot in the NBA.
Right, but I think that's why I said he has to go to college as a coach and prove himself there, because that's what all college coaches do. You go to college, you rack up a whole bunch of wins with talent, you send a bunch of kids to the NBA, and then eventually they come knocking on your door and say, "We got big dough. Come on, we want you to come play." And I think for Isaiah, it's one of those things where he's going to probably have to take a college job and prove he can coach in order to get into the NBA. Because then they'll feel like he not only has assists, he has a system, he's done it, he's putting kids in here, the kids are coming into the NBA, he's won all these wins, he's doing great with them. You know what? We want him and bring his system to the NBA. And, you know, I think that's the only way he's going to get back in the NBA is he's going to have to coach his way and win his way back into the NBA. You know, unless somebody's really desperate or there's nobody available or what have you, which I can't imagine. You know, do I think he deserves a shot as a coach in the NBA? Absolutely. Because I see so many coaches that lose and lose, and they go somewhere, they stay around for a couple years, they lose, and all we're doing in the NBA really is recycling coaches. That's all they do anyway. Same thing in football.
And I think that's what Zeke was trying to do, taking that Florida International job. Because when he took that job, that was the very first year the Florida International was eligible to play Division One. So he was thinking he was going to take that program from scratch and try to make something of it. Just unfortunately, it didn't work out because Florida, it's tough to get guys there with all the schools down in Florida. It's a tough job, man.
Right.
Tough job.
I mean, just like you look at Woodson. Woodson signs an extension with the Knicks. This dude was just with Atlanta. How many jobs has Mike Whitson had? It just keeps being recycled on a different team with different players, you know. And I'm saying, so a guy like Isaiah shouldn't be kicked out because he had a rough time at Indiana, you know, with the Pacers as a coach. And then he goes to you know, New York as a GM and then has a rough time, you know, rough time there. That's fine. But I'm saying as a coach, he hasn't had enough. To me, there's a difference in playing and coaching. A lot of players can't coach. It's not an easy thing. A lot of players can't coach. Because to me, I think you have to see the game differently than how you play it. You have to see it from the outside, even if you played it before. You have to have a vision to be able to look at and say, you know what, I see this differently. Because when you're in the game, it's hard. But when you're out of the game, you see the things, you start noticing things and seeing things based on your experiences. But every player can't be a coach. Every player can't be a coach. Because some of them too hot-headed. Some of them too competitive to be a coach. They'll kill somebody. You know, they'll put their hands on a guy like, man, you ain't do, you know, it's just crazy. You know? So I just think the jury's out on Isaiah. And I think he, you know, when he gets the chance, I think it'll be better. I just think it will be.
Okay.
So, Mike, you know, glad you're here, man, to help us out, man.
Definitely, man. I couldn't make the inaugural show, but I definitely wanted to make sure I called in tonight, man. I might put your name in the hat for the Florida International job. Who knows?
No, I don't want that job. I like the one I got right now. Hey, look, I've won 5 championships in these past 3 years. I'm doing real good right now. I'm batting 1,000 as far as I'm concerned, because I know that at some point I'm going to get a drought. I'm going to kick a drought, and I'm going to be like, I'm going to try to hang on to these because, you know, I like I said, I've won, you know, this past one, the ACPBL, was my 5th in 3 years. So I've won a lot in the past 3 years, and to me that's unprecedented. And, you know, I give God credit.
It actually should be 6, but we'll say that story for another time.
Yeah, we'll say that for another time.
Mac, we got another call from 202.
Okay.
We're going to bring in here and see what they got to say.
All right, cool. No problem.
Call from the 202. Welcome to No Chaser with Mac Jerry and also with Black. State your name and what you got to say.
Hello?
Yeah. What's your name and what do you got to say?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up,
man? Okay.
Hey, how you
good.
Doing, man? It's Mac Duell, man.
Who's this?
This is Will.
Hey, what's up, Will?
Hey, what's up, man?
Good, man.
Hey,
good.
Man. You know I was gonna call in. I told you I was gonna call in and show you some more love, man.
Thank you, man.
Again,
I appreciate it.
Again, it's Friday, no doubt. Yeah, man. Hey, man. I just wanted to tell you, man. I know I told you on, contact you on Facebook when we communicate. I just wanted to tell you how proud I was, man, of y'all winning that championship again this year, man. You know.
Yeah. It was hard. It was tough, man.
No doubt. Y'all doing your thing, man. Hey, man, I'm gonna try and make it out to the farm, man, to see you do your thing, man. See y'all
good.
Do your thing. Man.
Yeah, we'll be there opening day, man. The champs, Lincoln Park. We'll be there opening day. We'll be playing the 8 o'clock game, and then I have my 6 o'clock team. We play the next day at 6 o'clock the day after. So you know, definitely come check us out. Have you been listening to us? Have you been listening to us long to this? You know, today.
I just tuned in, man. You know, I had some things I had to do, so I just called in, man, when y'all picked me up right then. I just called
Let me ask you a question, man. I want to get callers involved, and I like to, and since you called in, I want to ask you, who to you, and Black, I want you to weigh in on this too, because I don't think you were in here when we were talking about this. Who to you, Will, is the best point guard in the game, and who do you think is the best point guard left in the playoffs right now?
Oh, wow. In the game? Oh, man. That's
and I like this question because you're the same as Jerry did. Jerry had a hardest time trying to come up with that.
Man, it's wow, it is kind of hard, man.
You got to pick one.
I would say, all right, in the game right now.
If you were starting a team, who would you pick? Like, if you said, okay, look, I need a great point guard, who would you pick? I mean, just, you know, just give me that.
CP3.
Who?
Chris Paul.
Chris Paul. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you think that's the best in the game?
Yeah, I mean, not by a large margin, but you know, I think he's the best in the game, like I'm by a very slim margin.
And why do you say he's the best in the game?
Because he has an all-around game, man. He can score. He definitely gets the team involved. He has that killer attitude that you want your point guard to have. He can play defense. He even rebounds the ball exceptionally well for somebody his size.
That's
so
great.
You put all those things together, that's you can't really ask no more for a point guard. You know, dude, go out there, you know, score, you're going to score, you're going to get teammates involved.
Right.
He's going to rebound, he's going to play D. You can't really ask much more of that out of
right.
a point guard.
Okay. So who would you say is the best left in the playoffs right now?
Tony Parker.
Okay. So you and Jerry agree on that one. He said Tony Parker too.
Yeah, Tony Parker, man. I don't know what happened to him, man. All of a sudden, I don't know, man. I think Russell Westbrook is great, but I think what Tony Parker is doing, man, he can't be stopped getting into the lane, and neither can Russell either, but Tony Parker is making the right pass every time or making the right shot. No,
okay.
When Russell gets into the lane, Russell shoots. You know, when Tony Parker gets into the lane, you don't know where he's going. You know, he might hit you with that teardrop, or he might hit Duncan, or he might kick it out to Danny Green for a three.
Right.
It makes them that much harder. It makes him that much harder to withstand because he has a myriad of things that he can do with the ball. Russell is looking at that basket. When Russell gets into that painted area, he's not looking to dish the ball. You know,
okay.
And I just think that makes it much harder than the teams, you know what I'm saying?
Right. I got you. Well, thanks, man, for sharing, man. I appreciate that, brother. And call in anytime,
no,
man. When we have any topics, call in, please, man. By all means, anytime.
Hey, no doubt, man. I'm getting my schedule. So I do basketball training. I train my players and stuff. But I'm getting more out of the way so I can come and check some games out this year, man.
Yeah, come on down. Like I said, come on down, man. I mean, you're more than welcome, man. Good to talk to you, man. Thanks, brother.
All right, stay up, man.
All right, sir. Later.
All right, Will.
We got any more calls?
No, we don't.
Okay, good. All right, Black, give it to me.
I got to go.
Same question.
Will, I like CP3. Man, just his court vision alone out there, he takes command of that point guard position. I'm definitely a big CP3 fan. So I would have to say CP3 as far as best in the game right now. The one that's left in the playoffs, I like Parker, but I'm going to say Rondo. I like the way Rondo plays. Any night can get you a triple-double. He's the definition of what you want for a point guard, getting you steals. He has that long reach. He gets the ball to where players in comfortable possessions, where they're easy to score. I think if he played with a much younger team, he will have a much bigger impact on the game.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that. But that's what I was telling Jerry. I told Jerry. I said, Jerry, I said, what I like about Rondo is the fact that he has a balance. Like, he has the perfect balance of he doesn't score as much as the other one. I think that's the only knock against Rondo from the average fan that would say, yeah, because most people nowadays, the newer fans, like now stuff, they think that a point guard job really is a score. But what people really don't realize is what a point guard is really his primary job is not to score. Because the point guards that we know of, you know, Isaiah.
Yeah, Rondo, he's a throwback to me. He's a throwback point guard to me. He's everything you want in the point guard.
Right, because Stockton and Isaiah were guys who would give you assists, 25 points, 15 points, and give you, like, you know, 15 to 20 assists, you know, and then play defense and do other things, rebound or, you know, run the team.
Mm-hmm.
And you give it to your other stars. And I see that in Rondo, you know, but Jerry – said, you know, an answer that I've heard a lot, though, is Deron Williams.
We got about a minute left.
All right, we have a minute left. I'm going to do in this 1 minute, I had a thing on here, and I'm going to just say it. What we black folks do that get on my nerves, that is, what gets on my nerves is us performing and acting a fool at the fast food places and the restaurants. We got to stop it. All right. Go ahead and shut it down, Jerry. Whatever you want to do, baby, it's up to you.
All right. You've been listening to Mac and Jerry. This we give it to you straight. With no chaser. I want to thank Black for joining us. And tune in next week. 7 o'clock is where we're at on Friday night. Talk to you later. Peace to you, my brothers. We're out of here.
We're out.
Oh, you know I'm doing it this way. Oh, and I'm thinking one way and doing another. We're out of here as of right now.